I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating at Lighthouse 23 years in business and just entering our 10th year of doing open line web conferences. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our brand new 2017 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. So we'd invite you to browse around our new website after our program. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab for whatever topic you can possibly think of we've covered over the last 10 years, either through our publications, which is Keeping on Track, or our open line program. Also, our second book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. Plus, in 2018, we will be having our third book released, Cracking the Team Building Code. And in 30 days, actually, about a week or two from now, we will be offering skills testing. And for those of you that work with Lighthouse on a regular basis, you might have met Glenn Croy. Glenn has been with us for a couple months. He's a new consultant and our COO for Lighthouse Consulting Services. Glenn has been a COO for companies over the years and ranged from 60 employees to 600 employees. Has a great deal of experience. We're so grateful to have him on board. He has a vast knowledge of OD and just very appreciative that he's part of our team. Our topic today is 10 considerations for driving exceptional performance through sales compensation. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'm going to be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our program. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar, assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much more. We have an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S.-based company, please let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to the calls we get from clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. This is a very popular topic. We have quite a few people on, so we'll do the best job that we can. But after the program, you can always call our guests or email them directly with additional questions. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line if we have time, so you can talk directly with our guests. So during the program, either send in your questions or you can write them down and ask them later on. I want to introduce our special guest for today. Larry Kump is a very close Larry is in my Vistage group and is my accountability partner and our buddy, and a wonderful human being and an outstanding business person. He's affectionately known as the local comp guy, serves as managing partner of LTC Performance Strategies. Over the years, Larry and his team have helped close to 500 leading organizations across industry utilizing innovative total compensation solutions to attract, motivate, and retain quality performers. And that's key in this marketplace. First of all, it's tough to find people. Then you got to retain them so they don't go running off. Steve Smith is also part of the program today. Steve serves as LTC's Director of Client Services. Steve has consulted on hundreds of compensation initiatives with a focus on sales and other forms of performance-based compensation. Larry and Steve are the co-authors of Executive Compensation for Private Companies, CEOs, and Business Owners. Hey, guys, where can they get that book?
Amazon.
It's on Amazon? Okay,
probably
great.
Yep.
Okay, great. I feel privileged to have Larry and Steve on our program today and preparing us for the future for dealing with today's issues as we get into the subject. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic is around what is strategic planning, and it will be a panel discussion. It's something we all need to be focused on. So Larry and Steve, welcome back to Open Line. We're so grateful to have you on it again.
Thank you, Dana. We're humbled. That was a very warm introduction, and we really appreciate the opportunity to be with all you guys today to talk about what's been a very hot topic and getting increasingly so. So I guess we should probably just dive in. You know, one of the things that we've noticed is that during the last few years, we've been deluged with requests to help our clients develop more effective sales compensation programs, ones that help them to attract, motivate, and retain top performers, while also at the same time providing them with a strong return on investment. Of all the different types of compensation, you know, if you're talking about executive compensation or salary administration programs, sales compensation is probably the most tricky. And so we boiled our presentation down today into 10 key steps, and we're going to walk through those steps. Since sales comp is such a significant investment, one thing we want to mention is we never start one of these related projects without first clarifying with our clients how they want to position their sales compensation program against the market and what they want to achieve, which is what we call the program objectives. We usually come up with about 8, 10, 12 objectives, and you can see examples of some of these types of objectives on the slide. Next one, just touch on the importance of goal focus and organizational alignment. As I'm sure you've all seen, sales people and operations people often butt heads. They often find themselves in conflict. And many of the operations people feel that, you know, salespeople are prima donnas and they're overpaid. And, of course, the salespeople have their own comments about the operations people. And while everything starts with sales, we work closely with our clients to first make sure that the sales organization's goals are closely aligned with the overall company's goals. We also work to ensure that within the sales force that there's a level playing field to make it, you know, easier to do appropriate goal setting or quota setting and to make sure that these goals are then aligned properly and compatible across the sales organization to, you know, minimize any unhealthy conflict.
Larry, we just had a question come in. What companies tend to resist changing their sales comp plans?
Well, that's a good question. You know, a lot of there's of course just normal resistance to change. One of the things that we've seen over the years is the one that resists the change the most is usually the head of sales. And our observation is a lot of times, you know, just like a lot of other people, the sales head doesn't want to look bad. May have only worked for one or two companies before and typically brings in a kind of sales compensation program that he or she may have had at the last company, and that oftentimes doesn't work because each company is different. And sometimes that just goes on for quite a while until at some point, you know, the business owner or the CEO intervenes and says, we need to, you know, take a look at this. But there's a lot of times a lot of resistance to that kind of change.
Okay, thank you.
So let's talk a little about role clarification and alignment. One of the things that makes sales compensation very challenging is that companies are continuously changing the way they sell, and as such, they modify the roles of its sales employees. And, of course, it's important for the sales employees and their supervisors to make sure that their roles are very closely, you know, thought out and aligned, whether they're using full job descriptions or mini profiles and the priorities are identified. You know, for instance, you know, if you look at a sales organization, you might have a hunter. You know, another person might be just a general outside sales rep. Somebody else might be, let's say, an account manager, an inside sales rep. Somebody else might be a product specialist or a sales manager or a sales engineer. All of those roles are important, but each one's different, and each one requires a slightly different type of sales compensation plan. One of the things we've also noticed is that most forward-thinking companies are working to develop more, I guess you'd say, holistic or well-rounded sales employees to provide more flexibility for their companies as well as their employees. So one of the things that we've noticed is that in the past, organizations might have a commission plan that focuses everything on sales or net sales or gross profit or whatever it is. And those things could and usually are still very important, but in working with our clients, you know, recently we're finding that they're saying, well, it's not just the production, but they've got to work as a team, or they have to be able to utilize the technology well, or they have to focus on retaining all the customers or certain customers. So what's very important to us as we're talking to our clients is, you know, what is it you really want this sales organization to accomplish, and how can we best align it with the overall company, and then how can we best align the sales roles and the sales goals to, you know, optimize the results.
So once you've taken a look at the goal alignment and the nature of the roles within your organization, and then helped to define how you want people performing those roles moving forward, then the next thing that we're going to come to is really the compensation. So when you talk about how much you pay a sales individual, there's really two points that are incredibly important. The first is going to be to ensure that you're competitive to the external market, so meaning that you're paying however you desire to pay, whether you want to be incredibly aggressive, about average to market, or, you know, somewhat conservative, that you know what that number is and you've targeted that to the outside market for your folks on average, which then leads you to the internal part of it. And the internal part is probably just as important, if not more important, than the external part. And this is really how you begin to, delineate your folks based on the top performers, the average performers, and the subpar. And you have everyone feeling that everything is fair and great and it works very well. Or conversely, everyone walks around thinking, this is totally unfair, and they don't treat us right at all internally. And, you know, balancing those two equations is going to be incredibly important to having an effective sales plan.
Two questions came in. First question is how do you how does an organization go about knowing what is the right salary to pay and any additional bonuses, et cetera? And the second question is, what's the biggest mistakes that companies make in their plans?
So in terms of the first question, Dana, how do you know how much to pay? That really first goes back to the very initial slide, which is, what is your philosophy? And if you don't have a philosophy, you must address that first, because having market data means nothing if you don't have a philosophy. So that's figuring out, again, you know, for a good, average, proficient salesperson, where do we want to be? We want to be market competitive. We want to be super aggressive with salaries and ultra conservative with bonuses. Do we want to be the other way around, super conservative with salaries, ultra aggressive with bonuses? But once you have that buttoned down, it's then a matter of getting survey data from the external market to figure out what is that benchmark you're going against. To point out, that's absolutely something that we do here at LTC. It's a service we provide. We benchmark jobs all the time. So that is a source to help you identify that number. There's also an array of data out there online, Glassdoor, things of that nature, and some of it's good, some of it's bad, but, you know, as the world changes and evolves, there definitely is survey data that you could look at online as well.
Yeah, I think, and Dana, I think there was another question about I think some of the biggest mistakes that we see companies making, and there's several. I think the first thing is not aligning the sales program with the business goals, where they're kind of banging heads and not running parallel paths. I think also sometimes if the goals and the objectives are either unclear or maybe there's too many objectives, that can create a problem. Another thing we see is not modeling the plan to ensure that the plan is cost-effective and yields a strong pay for performance and a good return on investment. One of the things we noticed the last year or two, we were having companies call us and they were finding that they were actually overpaying their people. They thought they put the right type of plan in, and one company was targeting to pay. This is a medical device company targeting to pay their outside salespeople around $250,000, and ended up paying one of them $650,000. So this person, of course, was very happy, but wasn't going to leave. But again, it wasn't structured properly, and it wasn't cost effective, and it wasn't giving the right return on investment. So those kinds of things.
Okay, thank you. That's great.
So if I jump forward to the next slide, then this is a topic we somewhat discussed already, but it's the relationship between pay and performance. So that is to say, as a starting point, it's how do you do the mix on compensation? So back to that question you brought up, Dana, how do you know what is the proper salary? How do you know what is a proper target bonus or bonus design for a plan? And there's no right answer to that. It's, looking at that outside market data, looking at your internal equities, and thinking about your philosophy and coming up with a design that makes most sense once you've weighed the pros and the cons. So, for any one given job, let's say you decide that you're going to go incredibly aggressive, so ultra lucrative salaries and very conservative bonuses, well, you might have a real easy time recruiting people and getting them to come over with that big salary that you're going to offer, but there's not much motivation, at least monetary motivation, for them to really perform well once they're with your firm. Conversely, if you're going to go incredibly substandard on salaries but then offer these giant bonuses or commissions, you might have one heck of a time trying to recruit anybody to come over and work for you. But those who you do get, if they're a top performer, they're going to love life and make bank. But if they're a poor performer, they're going to have a tough time just making ends meet. So you have to balance both of those things and think about what's proper for the role itself and the people you're trying to attract. So as I jump over to the next slide, this would be this is a fairly long one. It's the plan design. So on this one, we really then kind of talk about once you've decided for a role that you want to offer a salary within X range and a bonus potential within Y range, then how do you design that bonus plan? And the first step in our minds is to think about what is it that you're trying to motivate these individuals to do, and how are you going to reward them for that? So by that I mean when you drill down to a sales job, are you only trying to motivate and reward with cash sales revenue, which a lot of, standard straight commission plans do, or are you trying to bring in other qualitative and quantitative goals? So you might think, well, margins also matter quite a bit to us, or developing an effective pipeline, or perhaps utilizing this CRM software that the firm just invested a ton of money into is probably pretty important. Perhaps the overall performance of the company, is an important factor, which is often left off in a straight commission plan. So, again, there's no right answer to what the goals should be on a sales plan, but it's to start and think about what it is you want these individuals to do, and of those tasks, what goals are so important that they really should be linked to some type of monetary reward. So that's step number one, is figure out those goals. And then step two is, are you going to do this incentive in a bonus plan design or a commission plan design? And before I even jump into the difference of those two, I should say that it's not mutually exclusive. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You can absolutely blend those concepts as well. But if we start out with the commission approach, the reason I say that first is that's the most common type of sales incentive plan historically, and that's usually what a lot of people jump to. It's incredibly common. It can be very straightforward and easy to administer. The most simple commission plan might say you get 1% of sales revenue. Absolutely easy to administer and keep track of. The downfall, really, with an approach like that is it's sometimes reliant on the past, and then it gets out of hand. So you sit down today and think, well, you know, our sales folks sell about $1 million, and we kind of feel like a decent bonus, might be X. So let's just divide that out, and that means they get this type of commission. So you put that into play, and then suddenly a couple years down the line, the economy changes, your business model changes, your business grows, something like that happens. And these salespeople are selling easier, their job isn't as tough, maybe they don't have to travel as much, things just change, but they're selling a ton, and you're sitting down thinking, I never intended to pay them this much money. So then you have to go to them and change that commission rate and take it down, and that never sits well with anybody. So that's an inherent downfall to the commission. Another downfall, again, is that it's a pretty limited focus. So you're really only talking about one financial measure or maybe a couple financial measures, and that's about it. But that said, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, and there's some approaches that you can use. So number one would be, like I said, a straight commission, X percent of some financial figure, say sales. That's one type of commission that you could do. You could do a commission on growth rather than total sales. That's very common, again. So every year, instead of getting 1% of sales, you get 1% of the sales growth over your prior year. At least with that way, you kind of offset the potential for these giant commissions that just keep growing and growing. But that's not always fair, because sometimes you can't just keep growing and growing and growing. It depends on the job, the sales job, what it is. You could do a stepped commission. So maybe it's 1% on the first $1 million, 2% on the next million, 3% after that kind of thing. So that really starts to put this steep growth curve on their earnings, so that the top performers really make a lot of money and the low performers not so much. You could do commissions on different product lines, so your more profitable product lines, you do a high commission. The low profit ones, you do a small commission. Or you could do some variant on all of that. Maybe you tie it to margins rather than to revenue. But that's essentially the gist of commissions. It's got to be X% of something.
So the key is planning ahead so you don't get yourself stuck in a corner and upsetting people, it sounds like.
Absolutely, yes. And that...
There's a question. Oh, I'm sorry, Steve.
Oh, no, go ahead.
There's a question that came in, and I think you addressed it, but I just want to make sure. What does your research tell us about targeted goal bonus versus commission pay plans?
Yes. I guess perhaps rather than just addressing that right on, that really is the perfect segue to the next section, which is utilizing a target bonus instead.
Oh, perfect.
So if you kind of sit down and think and forget about sales jobs and just think about every other job within a company, more likely than not, the way those bonuses work is via a targeted bonus approach. So you think about, say, the CEO of your firm, whether it be yourself or someone else in the company, oftentimes that person's bonus would be represented as some percent of their salary. So maybe it's 30% of their salary is their target bonus, and then that's tied to maybe a couple company goals and a couple individual goals. And based on how that person performs, the metrics then dictate what they earn for the year. The big difference with this approach is every year you get to reset it. You're not stuck with this certain commission percent that you feel somewhat inclined to carry over. So next year, you reassess the situation, where your company has been, where it's going, what is it that you want this person to do, and you reset the goals. And that's how it works for any other kind of bonus, most likely than not. So in our minds, there's no reason that you can't or shouldn't do that for sales folks as well. It's not the historical norm, if you will, but it's definitely the trend we're seeing happening, and a lot of our organizations are migrating that way. So again, like I said, with a plan like this, if you want to do it for sales folks, it's, you know, sit down every year and think about a couple of goals that might make sense, set a realistic stretch, and then assign some performance metrics to those so that based on where they end up throughout the year, you have an exact monetary value that they earned spit out as a result. And everybody's on the same page. Next year, you reassess the situation and do it all over again. And, you know, if the person's doing great and, you know, they keep reaching higher and higher levels, you can absolutely set a larger target bonus for them next year, but you don't have to. It's up to you. You're not stuck with that one-to-one relationship like you are with the commission plan. So there's far more flexibility if you go this route. And then before I move on from that topic, really just the last thing to point out, which is what I said at the beginning, you know, these aren't mutually exclusive approaches. So you might sit and think, well, you know, the target bonus sounds pretty cool and interesting, but with our organization, commissions are just so ingrained, I couldn't even fathom changing away from that. So nothing precludes you from perhaps tweaking that commission a little bit, maybe modifying the approach just a touch, pulling back the value a little bit, in order to make room for some targeted bonuses on other goal categories that you want to incent that you otherwise haven't. So maybe you leave that commission on the sales, but then you work in a target bonus based on margin or based on customer satisfaction or any other factor such as that.
Ooh, I like that. Taking customer satisfaction and embedding that into the process or integrating it into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who would have thought of such a thing? Brilliant.
Thank you for that, Dana. You know, almost everything we look at, we're looking at the what and the how. And a lot of times you'll see some companies that put a lot of emphasis on the design of the sales program, but a poor job on communications. And other ones will have a poorly designed program, but one that's communicated well. So to us, what's more important? The answer is yes, or the answer is both. You need to have, you know, we were very concerned about having a well-designed sales comp program that aligns and focuses the efforts, but also one that's understood. It's amazing to us how many of our clients, you know, let us know that whether it's executive compensation or sales compensation, the people don't really understand the spirit or workings of the program. And when you think about the root of the word incentive, it's to incent. If people don't understand why the program has been structured the way it is, how it works, how the participants can optimize the plan for themselves and the organization, it's a tremendously missed opportunity. So I think this concept of transparency and clarity is not only been important, but especially with the millennials, more and more millennials coming into the workforce, we're finding that they have a lot of questions, and they're looking for more transparency. They're looking for what they call what's real, and they want that kind of clarity. So we're actually grateful to find that more and more of our clients are becoming more open with the numbers and more transparent with how things work. Takes us to the next topic, and that is realizing how fast things are changing, and that, like for instance, the baby boomers that were expected to start moving out of the workforce, and they didn't for quite a while, are starting to move out. It's very important moving forward to have the right people properly trained in the right place at the right time. So again, turnover within the sales force has increased recently due to baby boomers retiring, and also because of intense competition for top talent. It's interesting, you know, a lot of us, you know, remember the phrase that I guess employees are our most important asset. What we've been seeing lately is that seems to be changing to our best employees are our most important asset. We're seeing that more and more. So everybody seems to be competing for the top talent. It's also never been more important for companies to refocus on development and retention, because we all know that you know, a lot of companies are not training people or orienting them or developing like they did in the past. And yet they're expecting great things, and so they've got to focus more on development. And we also now realize that even though the cost of turnover is not readily apparent on financial statements, retaining employees is very important. Average turnover costs range, you know, depending on what study you look at, but even if you just figure it's 35% at the lower level, that's pretty expensive. So it's very important for companies to make sure they've got the right people properly trained, the right slots at the right time.
Larry, a question just came in. How do you design a bonus program that rewards salespeople more timely, quarterly versus annual, but protect the company from overpaying a bonus for one or two great quarters while missing the annual goal?
Yeah, we're seeing that in terms of when companies pay their salespeople, you know, there were some that would just pay the annual bonus, but if you ask salespeople, they'd like to get their incentives daily. So there is that kind of pressure. We're seeing that a lot of companies are paying their incentives, whether they're commissions or bonuses, either monthly or quarterly, because they want to have that kind of response and that kind of reinforcement. Now, how they're trying to protect themselves in case there is an economic downturn, which is one of the things we talked about earlier, you know, if we go into recession, is they may structure it so that they hold back some money, you know, and then maybe true it up later during the year or at the end of the year. So. And there's some organizations that might tie something to incentive, and maybe they pay 10% of the incentive if you're on target the first quarter, and 20% the second, 30% the third, and then if everything is still still going as well as planned. Maybe they true it up and pay the remaining 40% at the end of the year. So there's not just one or two things you could look at. There's many ways of doing it. And again, it's a matter of trying to figure out what's best for the company, but it's also what's best for the participants.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we jump over to the next section, it's the provisions, plan provisions. Something that we should mention, a few years ago, some legislation passed. So if you're in California, not necessarily other states, but California, sales plan documents legally have to be written. It doesn't mean it has to be a super extravagant document, but it has to be something on paper in order to, you know, muster the test there. But just because you put it on paper doesn't, you know, mean that everything has been buttoned down. And the reality is, if you're going to take the time to develop a good incentive plan, you should address all of those provisions beforehand rather than waiting for something to happen and then trying to negotiate a solution after the fact. So when we say provisions, we're really talking about all those what ifs. So what happens if somebody resigns from your organization halfway through the year? What happens to their incentive that's kind of halfway in progress? What if they've earned something but you've yet to cut them the check for it? What happens if somebody goes out on a medical leave of absence? What happens if there's a windfall, if you will? So a sale that came in which was huge and it was really as the result of not exactly the salesperson's efforts, just a fluke, if you will. What happens if two sales reps worked together on a sale? How do you split those earnings? So it's really thinking about as many what-ifs as you possibly can and coming up with the way you're going to address it before the fact and writing that into the plan so you have far less things that you have to sort out afterwards when everybody's kind of on edge at that point anyways.
Back to doing great planning
and
foreseeing. Okay. I can't tell you the number of times I've heard companies bring up issues on they didn't do the planning. I gave the salesperson or who is now the VP of sales phantom stock. Now they're not working hard, but they have phantom stock. What do I do now?
That thing would, if all else fails, plan. Or we often find, 1 hour planning saves 4 hours of execution. And, unfortunately, a lot of companies will spend all kinds of time and effort investigating different systems. But when it comes to compensation, which is typically their biggest expense or their biggest investment, they don't take the time to plan. And like you said, like you were alluding to, Dana, if they don't, then sometimes bad things happen.
And nobody that's attending today, and we have a number of people on today and also a number of associations from around the world that will be hearing this, you don't want to be in the position or put yourself in the position where you're saying, you're earning too much money, I'm cutting you back, just like you had mentioned earlier. You don't want that. That's a terrible place to be.
Yeah.
And that's the downside of a poorly designed commission plan, because as Steve was saying before, if you're paying X percentage and all of a sudden the business grows, then you have to kind of go back if you're going to stay with that kind of plan and cut the commission rate, which nobody wants to see happen. Good question.
Great.
So then all of this, planning really rolls into the ease of administration. And, this area has kind of been touched on already. But the fact is that you can do all of this great planning and come up with a plan design that seems to hit all of the right goal areas. But if you don't put it together in a nice laid out format and explain it well to everybody, then it's going to be an absolute bear for your accounting staff or payroll staff to administer it. They're not going to have a clue, who earned what. And, you know, on top of that, if your sales folks don't understand it, then they're not even really motivated by the plan. So all of which is to say, you know, really don't, two things, you know, don't overdo it. Don't overthink the plan. If you go too wild with goals and metrics, you could just lose everybody in the process. But at the same time, whatever you do come up with, ensure that you communicate it well to everybody so that it's administered properly. Don't forget that accounting or payroll function, because ultimately they need to understand it more so than anybody else.
And we talked before about the importance of planning, like you just brought up, Dana, and the importance of looking at the what and how. And it's funny when you ask people, so what do you want your sales compensation plan to do? And the first thing they might think of is we want to attract, motivate, you know, reward and retain our employees or our best employees. But again, there has to be balance because compensation is typically, as I mentioned before, one of the most expensive costs or one of the most expensive investments you have. And so the other part of attracting, motivating, retaining and rewarding folks is to make sure the plans are cost effective and you're getting a good return on investment. And we mentioned the one case of this person who the target was $250,000, ended up with $650,000. And we had a nurse, one of our clients, that was doing a little bit of business development, and the target compensation looked like it should be around 80, and she ended up making over 300. So, again, these participants are very excited to be making that much money, but if the design's not right, things can get out of hand. So we work really hard on starting with the philosophy, laying out those objectives, clarifying those roles, benchmarking to see what the competition is paying, making sure things are internally equitable, making sure the decisions are consistent. But before we usually launch a design, we also work with our clients to model, what the payouts could be under alternative scenarios. And so it's very clear then, you know, if this level of performance is achieved, then this is going to be the payout. So we really encourage our clients and other companies to take the time to make sure that the plans are effectively designed, effectively leveraged, so that your superstars are going to be getting the most money, and because those are the ones that you really want to reward, and also designed to make sure that these plans, the costs don't get out of control, that they are reasonably cost-effective, and you are getting a return on investment on this critical aspect. So to just kind of, as we're moving to close, to sum it up, just leave you with a couple thoughts. It all starts with hiring great salespeople. You know, a lot of times we'll talk with our clients and they're not getting the right results. And as we start looking at the job descriptions and the competencies, we start looking. We had one recently where it just became very important that this person didn't have the right people, and he's going to have to move some people, you know, off the bus, if you will, and bring in some new people. There's probably no other group within an organization where pay for performance is more critical. And, of course, this is an area, of course, where you guys get involved in Lighthouse in terms of the testing you do, which is just a tremendous resource. So you want to make sure that you're very clear on the specifications, that your screening is good, you're doing reference checks, maybe looking at testing people, as you know from talking with Dana, to make sure that you've got the right people, first of all. The other thing is salespeople, and we laugh about this, are very good at figuring out how they can make the most money. And a lot of times as we're talking with business owners and executives, they're saying that, you know, the salespeople are pretty happy. They're making good money, but they're not happy with their performance. And so we always suggest starting with, what is it that you want as a company to achieve? As an organization, how do you want your salespeople to be aligned with the overall organizational goals to make sure everybody's going the same direction? And then come up with the right design and then make sure that the communications are clear, that everybody knows what the spirit of the program is and how it works. With a properly designed program, what we found is they shouldn't have to change very much from year to year, and that's something that, you know, if going back to what you were alluding to before, Dana, how important planning is. A lot of times if a company half-asses it, if you will, and they throw something together, they find that doesn't work, okay, we'll try something else next year, then we'll try something out the next year, and it drives salespeople crazy. So we think you want to do right the first time. If you do right the first time, then it's generally pretty easy to migrate the plan from year to year.
It's also good, if it's planned appropriately, I would imagine it's also a great recruiting tool, so there's no wishy-washiness about it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It goes full circle. Okay. Right.
Yeah, and a lot of times when companies are recruiting, you know, somebody's interested in the organization, they want to ask questions, but sometimes they're hesitant to ask too many questions. But it's not uncommon for a salesperson or another person to come into an organization, and how they thought the compensation program worked is not how it works. So rather than getting into those embarrassing situations or conflict situations, we feel that that communication should be clear. And we always develop I don't think we mentioned this before, but a very simple sales communication plan document so that everybody understands how the plan works, dot the I's, cross the T's. And oftentimes, in the interest of transparency, we'll develop calculators for the person that's administering the program and also for the salespeople, so the salespeople can sit down and they can play on the, you know, with the calculator and know ahead of time what they will be able to earn based on how well they do in these different areas.
Ooh, that's phenomenal. Wow. And also staying out away from potential lawsuits by doing planning once again. We have one more question here, and then we're going to open the line up in just a minute here. The question is, we have a new salesperson coming on board with a current book of business. We're planning on him being 100% commission-based. We will offer benefits, retirement, et cetera. Is that a good idea, bad idea? We offer a base salary?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, Dana. A lot of it, first off, I guess I would say is going to be industry-driven. There are industries out there where 100% commission is not necessarily uncommon. There are others where that would be terribly uncommon. If someone's coming over with a book of business and the book of business seems sufficient enough where they can make a decent earning right off the bat with that straight commission, then if it makes sense in your industry and it aligns with the rest of your practices internally, then there's perhaps no flaw in that concept in and of itself. But that still doesn't preclude you from wanting to think through, the entire process, the goals, what it is that you want this person to achieve when they come over to your organization. How much do you want to pay them if they, achieve those various goals? And doing all that planning such that you arrive at a plan, that makes sense in order to pay them the commissions that they're looking to get as a result of it. The one thing you may or may not have to do as well when you go straight commission is offer some type of draw against the commission so that they at least have some level of stable income in the event that they have a bad month or a month or something of that nature.
I think that's one of the reasons why we benchmark compensation almost every day of the year, is because companies want to hire somebody, but they're really not quite sure what to pay the person. So it's very important for us to make sure we understand the role and we understand the industry, we understand what they're trying to achieve, and then we can do our own research and provide a pretty quick turnaround on benchmarks to look at what overall cash compensation should be at different levels, and then make sure we understand how that sales position is going to be broken down. For instance, is it really more of a hunter role? Is the person the one that's really going to be out there prospecting for a new business and have a lot of influence in bringing in somebody new? Or conversely, is it a person that's not going to be doing much hunting and is really more focused on trying to just retain and maybe penetrate accounts? Or conversely, maybe it's another position that is not doing much prospecting and maybe limited selling and is really just a matter of focusing on service and post-sale service. So it was a very good question, but I think we would want to delve in more and look more at those specifics.
Okay. And if so, a couple things before we close today. First of all, we're gonna open up the line in just a second, so we can if you have questions directly, you can talk to our guests. We're going to the next program. It's not correct on there, but it's going to be what is strategic planning, and we'll be sending out information on our next program for April. And I want to thank everyone for attending. We're going to turn off the audio or the recording feature in just a second, because we've had folks in the past say, hey, I don't want my questions recorded with my voice on it, so we like to respect our guests today. But before we close today, two things. First, I want to thank Larry and Steve for doing a terrific program on a very complex topic. And if anyone has specific questions you guys want to talk to them about, please feel free to email Larry or Steve. Their contact information is on the screen, and also we'll be sending out slides in the next couple of days, and they'll be more than happy to talk to you, or you can email them your questions directly. We want to thank you, everybody, for attending Open Line as always, and look forward to having you attending next month. So let me turn off the recording feature. I am going to ask everyone, because we have so many people on this program today, to please put your phone on mute. Don't put it on hold. Put it on mute, and then unmute yourself if you have a question. So let me turn the recording feature off. We'll be right back.